This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
And welcome back to the Fan Evening Show. Start of hour number four together. Thanks so much for finding us. I am Jason Mackey. The voice you just heard is Joel Nelson. Of course, talking a little hockey in this hour. The Penguins head coach. It's getting down to brass tacks. Basically, Kyle Dubas is going to have to hire somebody sooner rather than later. And let's go out to the fan hotline where we find Dan Kongerski of Pittsburgh Hockey Now to talk about some of that. Dan, what's going on? How's your evening?
Oh, it is just peachy watching Casey DeSmith defend the Edmonton Oilers.
How about that? Casey DeSmith on. Dallas making a very surprising move in goal, huh?
Well, I don't know how surprising, but yeah, it's kind of interesting. It's like, oh yeah, there's Casey DeSmith. I forgot about him.
Old friend Casey. I was asked a question, I probably omitted Casey today, about some of the best backups in Pittsburgh history. Who are some of the best backup goaltenders the Penguins have ever had, Dan?
Oh, that's a really good question. I think you go Kenny Raggett because he eventually became the starter.
Yeah.
I think you have to put Frank Pietrangelo in a kind of a special place for the save, right?
Yep, no doubt. He was on my list. I missed Kenny Raggett. Shame on me for 6 weeks for that. Mr. Game One was on there.
Oh, Mr. Game One, yeah. Let's see here. Ty Conklin was always kind of an interesting, I mean, he pushed Marc-Andre Fleury to finally get his career on track. So, yeah, maybe I'll go with him too.
Okay, I like it. More important issues, though. Want to talk about the Penguins head coaching search coming down to the wire, but there's a few candidates there. They started with a very wide list. Who are your favorites at this point? Maybe it's one, maybe it's three. You know, who are the names that you have circled?
Yeah, I'm going to get in trouble with this because everyone seems to want Mitch Love, and, you know, there's already a fan club, I think, starting, which of course means I'm going to go in an entirely different direction. I think this coach maybe has to be able to be fired easily as the Penguins transition to, you know, steps in this rebuild process. I still like DJ Smith. I'm not sure how serious of a contender Todd Nelson is. I mean, we heard externally that they liked him, but I can't confirm that he's interviewing or you know, is into the final rounds. But I still like a guy like that. You know, those are some of the guys I've circled.
So this Mitch Love fan club that you speak of, where is this? I can't find it anywhere. I want to join it. I can't find it.
Oh, just hop on X and just type the words Mitch Love, and you'll have like 1,000 likes in 2 seconds.
All right. So why are you against Mitch Love?
Well, I'm
because you think
him.
Somebody should be able to be if they need to get out from under this quickly.
Yeah, I mean, I think Mitch Love is kind of a destination sort of coach. When you're ready to take that step, you go for Mitch Love to take you to the next level. There are a few reasons. I don't want to say downplay or I'm against Mitch Love. I mean, that's certainly not the case. But he is defensive oriented, and as smart as that sounds, boy, I just can't imagine a rookie head coach herding cats of this Penguins team to instill a true defense, you know, love of playing some defense. That's the primary one. I also I think it would be such an extraordinary challenge for a guy to come into his very first NHL head coaching job. On one end of the room, you're going to have Sidney Crosby, Chris Letang, Evgeny Malkin, Brian Rust, and then surrounding them, a bunch of guys who may not be old enough to rent a car come October. And the dichotomy of that room and how to deal with those guys on this end of the room and these guys on that's a Herculean task. maybe he's up to it. I certainly won't say he's not. But, you know, it's kind of for those reasons that I maybe think Mitch Love isn't the perfect fit for the Penguins.
So chatting Penguins here with Dan Kangurski on the Fan Evening Show. You can follow Dan on Twitter or X at the Dan Kangurski. Read his stuff at Pittsburgh Hockey Now. Of course, Dan, one of the things you wrote on there was about that they shouldn't bring in a defensive-minded head coach. I disagree with you, but that's okay. Two people can see the same thing differently. Why should they not bring in a defensive-minded head coach?
Oh, yeah, you read my the three essential qualities of the next head coach.
Which was very good, by the way. I enjoyed it. I don't have to agree with you.
I appreciate someone actually reading my stuff occasionally.
Stop.
No, I think it kind of just it goes against the grain and the DNA of the Pittsburgh Penguins. I mean, we're coming up on 40-plus years that this team has been offensively oriented. Now, I will tell you full stop, this season still, until the Stanley Cup is awarded, right? It's this season. When the Penguins sort of dialed back their forecheck this year, creating an extra layer in the neutral zone, which is kind of a defensive stance, or at least a counterattack stance, I thought they were a much better team and more successful. But Sullivan sort of abandoned that for long periods because I assume he didn't think he had that kind of buy-in to play that way for weeks at a time. And it is the Penguins. And the last couple of defensive coaches, we're talking Mike Johnston, who was there a year and a half before Sullivan, and going back 28 years, Kevin Constantine, they just didn't work. The fans don't respond to it. And let's be honest, ticket sales is an important part of this equation. It's just against the DNA. It's like the Steelers hiring a pass happy crazy coach. You just don't do it.
I mean, I see what you're saying. But they don't have the horses that they used to. Like in the Constantine era, you could try to outscore teams. You might have had the artillery. Right now, I don't know. I guess if you're not going to play a more responsible system, you're just going to have to wait and wait and wait till some of these kids grow up. And maybe that's what I need to accept, and that's fine. But, like, you know, if you're not going to play a defensive-style system, how are they going to win games? What's their identity going to be?
Well, I'll ask you this. Let's just say for, a genie flips the teams. The Carolina Hurricanes become the Pittsburgh Penguins, and the Penguins go down to Carolina. Do you think there would be a sellout to watch the way the Carolina Hurricanes play hockey for 82 games?
No. You mean if you took the Carolina Hurricanes and put them in Pittsburgh?
Yes. If you put
like
the
this current
team...
All right. I see what you're getting at now.
Okay.
But I mean, I think you're going to support a team that wins. Like if the Penguins win, people will support them.
Too. And they were getting 10,000-11,000 with a Jaromir Jagr-led team because Pittsburgh fans were like, no, that's not hockey. And they didn't show up for it.
Yeah,
I just don't think it fits. It doesn't fit the city, the culture, the hockey culture sort of thing. Maybe you're right. Certainly would get you the rebuild done faster. That's for sure.
I mean, that's my argument, but I do see yours as well. I want them to hire the right coach. If you could pick somebody right now, give me one name, your guy, Dan Kangurski, gets to make the choice right now. You get to be Kyle Dubas for 5 minutes. Who's it going to be?
Oh, I've kind of put myself in those positions. I wish I could interview these guys and really get a sense of, their blackboard skills, because that's what I really, I think, will unify the veterans and the young players. Is, actually, it was Mike Sullivan's strength. He had other weaknesses, but Sullivan's strength was always the whiteboard, right? Okay, do this, do this. I think that could kind of pull the room together a little bit. I just like the personal touches that DJ Smith and kind of guys like Todd Nelson sort of bring to the table. I'm really lukewarm on Jay Woodcroft. I don't think he has the presence to command such a separated room as the Penguins will have next year. So yeah, I kind of come back to those two guys again. And if I had my choice, I'd probably say DJ Smith, actually, because okay. I know he's a decent enough whiteboard guy.
Couple more minutes with Dan Kangurski of Pittsburgh Hockey Now here on the Fan Evening Show. Follow Dan at the Dan Kangurski on Twitter or X. Dan, player-wise, you know, if you're going to try to improve this roster, I'm not talking about coaching, I'm not talking about systems, What sort of things would you like to see them add this offseason? In a realistic way. Of course, you know, Mitch Marner to Pittsburgh would be a lot of fun. I'm just saying realistically.
Well, you're taking McDavid off the table?
I am. Yep. I don't think that's going to happen.
Ah, fine. You know, he could be a free agent in two seasons, I'm just saying. And everyone wants to come into Pittsburgh and play with Sidney Crosby, right?
Right, yeah, sure.
You know, I really do think they have to figure out that blue line. It was just horrendous this season. No pairing really worked, nothing. I mean, they were just so mistake-prone and loose and soft, and they really have to find I think a couple of left-siders, assuming Owen Pickering will be part of the mix. Maybe Ryan Shea is your six or seven. So, you know, one to two legit, you know, top four left-side defensemen who can not just take care of the defensive zone, but also skate with the team so that, let's say, Chris Letang doesn't have to try to play like he's 25. Or 30 anymore, to take some pressure off him, but also to lock down that defensive zone so we don't see guys coming off the mid wall with, you know, an express lane right to the net because nobody will touch him. I think that is the biggest fix for next season. And if you can find a center or two, maybe to bring along either immediately or for the near future, that wouldn't hurt either.
Dan Kangurski, thanks so much, man. I appreciate it. Always a pleasure.
Thanks, Jay.
Dan Kangurski from Pittsburgh Hockey Now does an excellent job. Check out his work, pittsburghhockeynow.com. Follow Dan at the Dan Kangurski. I'll be seeing Dan very soon, I'm sure, with the Penguins press conference. His pick to replace or to succeed Mike Sullivan, I should say, DJ Smith. I can't argue with it. It certainly seems like we're down to three. Mitch Love, DJ Smith, Jay Woodcroft. You can make an argument for all of them. You know, I get what Dan is saying, that the Penguins shouldn't, you know, slough back into a more defensive, conservative style. I think there's probably a middle ground there. I mean, you still want to enable your best players to play freely. I think there's a greater identity or sense of responsibility that the Penguins can instill in their game, whether that's Mitch Love, Jay Woodcroft, or DJ Smith. We'll hope the new guy can do it. I know I'm excited about the Penguins coach. And, you know, getting a little bit more hockey in our lives. July 1, obviously the first day of free agency there, and the Stanley Cup Final fast approaching. All right, before we get to some other topics here, I want to loop back to Steelers discussions, and, you know, we'll get into some Pirates stuff as well. I have a couple calls I want to get out to here. Mark in Fort Lauderdale wants to talk about Ben Cherington. What's up, Mark?
Hey, I want to say the article last Sunday about Matt Arnold was very insightful.
Thank you, Mark. I appreciate that.
The thing I think that distinguished Arnold compared to Cherington, and I'm not against Cherington in some ways. I'm probably one of his bigger supporters, because I'm going to tell you something. What's interesting about this whole Pirate situation, yeah, we're in year six, but he's developed an incredible pitching program. Dewey Robinson has a lot to do with that also, and some other people that are involved in the front office, where, you know, if you said to somebody, hey, what's the most important thing in baseball? Go out and find starting pitching. You can't afford it if you're a team like Pittsburgh. But where he's failed, and not where he's not Sid Thrift or Joel Brown or one of the previous successful Pirate general managers, is he hasn't made the trade from the prospect capital like Arnold did, as you pointed out so well last week in the article. And that's a big part of being a general manager in baseball today. Walt Jocketty, who just passed away, had one of the greatest sayings around. He said, if I stay around to see all the prospects develop, I won't be around to see any of them. And that was one of his favorite quotes. And I think that's what Cherington lacks. He's just not a good deal maker. I mean, Dave Dombrowski is going to go to the Hall of Fame because he was able to fleece the Marlins from Miguel Cabrera. He made one bad trade, Randy Johnson, for Mark Langston. But, I mean, if you look at his record, he always talks prospects up. He's trading. There's an old saying, if Dave Dombrowski calls you, don't pick up the phone. And, I mean, you know, and that's where I think Cherington really is not Matt Arnold's level.
Yeah, I agree with you, Mark. I mean, if you look at some of the trades Charrington has made, they're just not good enough. And I think it's something, you know, I was writing that column and thinking about what I wanted to say. You know, why didn't they hire somebody who was working in a small market and had familiarity in a small market? I'll never understand that. And shame on me for not realizing it as much at the time. You know, I should have had that thought. A lot of us should have had that thought. Granted, okay, I was in a different role whenever Charrington was hired. But that's a lesson that taught me that you want to hire somebody in a familiar climate. You know, hire somebody from Boston and bring them into Pittsburgh. That's just so different. So different.
I'll tell you one thing real quick, Jason. If Bob Nutting decides to make a change, I'll tell you the ideal candidate for the Pirates, Rob Seferro. The St. Louis Cardinals hired him this year from the Guardians. He's 32 years old out of Yale, and he's done an incredible job in numbers and acquisition and development, helping the Cardinals. I mean, this year everybody thought the Cardinals would be a dog, and Seferro, who's taken over their farm system, and Chaim Bloom, who's going to replace Mozeliak, that's a great young combo in St. Louis, and I think Seferro's got a tremendous future in the game. He learned from Matt Antonelli in Cleveland, and he's doing a tremendous job for the Cardinals right now.
Good stuff. Thanks, Mark. I appreciate the call. Have a good night. All right, Jim in Omaha wants to talk about Pirates coaching. What's up, Jim? How are you?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it.
Yep.
First of all, great show and a great column this week. I really enjoy your work. So
Thank you, sir. I appreciate that.
When you're, doing the evening shows. So I watch every freaking Pirates game.
And die hard.
I'm sorry, there. I apologize. I thought you were. Die Hard. My 82-year-old mother watches every game. We split the MLB package, and it's really sad when Hannah Mears comes out and says that Frazier shows a drill to Davis to get him to pull the ball less, and he's like opening up, you know, more of the field now. How the hell not 4 years of Pirates coaching at different levels, not show him something like that? It just amazes me. And real quickly, last segment you were talking about, and after this one, I'll leave you alone, about Nutting. You know, it's sort of like, you're exactly right. You will never really know what he's making. But even if what DK Sports said about him losing $2 million a year, I'll take that investment if your overall investment worth the team goes up $100 million a year. So, or bring an investor on for $2 million to cover that. That's a pretty good, pretty good process. So if you're the majority owner, so I'll let that go. And thanks again for everything. Appreciate it.
All right, man. Appreciate it. Thanks, Jim. Have a good night. Some good points there. I'll get to them. And I guess what Jim left us with is what I'll riff on for a second, but I do want to get into, you know, the future of the Pirates behind the plate, what happens to Jared Triolo, a few other kind of smaller, detail-y things. But it's not all about money. And this was something that a caller asked about before we got to Dan, and I probably could have expounded on it. But this is what I know, being around baseball the way I was for a pretty significant period of time, and I'm still around it a lot. It's not all about money, and it's hard to have that conversation. It's hard to have that conversation with people because they think you're defending the Pirates, and I'm not. It's not all about money. Other teams make smart decisions and do smart things. Like, if you tell me that the Pirates' payroll is going to be $90 million, but you can have the smartest, best general manager in the sport, you know, somebody that completely understands drafting, development, getting the most out of trades, I'd sign up for that. It's probably more important to be smart than rich in baseball. I mean, if you can be both, that's great. Then you're the Dodgers. It's pretty darn important to be rich, too. But if you're in Pittsburgh, and I'm trying to, you know, do a lot of what I did as a beat writer, where you kind of meet them where they are. If we sit here and scream and expect the Pirates to have $160 million payroll, we're going to be disappointed a lot. But if we expect the Pirates to draft well, to sign players, to make smart trades, to coach them well, those are things we can expect. Now, those are areas where this group has fallen short, certainly, and they should be criticized for it, and they are. Especially the trades, that's been a very bad part of things. You know, I remember talking to Bob Nutting sort of in the early days of this current group, and we were talking about like the Chris Archer trade and, you know, how unsettling that was and the Pirates having to get better at that stuff. And I don't think they have. Ben Charrington's trading has not been good enough. The drafts have not been good enough. The free agent signings have not been good enough. So I don't understand riding it out. I don't want to see the Pirates move. I don't want to see the city donate the team back to Major League Baseball, whatever that idea was. I don't expect Bob to sell. I'm trying to address all the kind of loose ends here. I don't think the Pirates will or need to, you know, blow it up and rebuild. I think there's the guts of a pretty decent team. They also have a lot of hard moves to make, and they can't screw them up. They need to add more offense, a lot more offense. The bullpen needs to be better. You know, defensively, they've improved some. They need to improve more. I don't know what Tommy Pham is. Anyway, I don't mean to go on a big, lengthy thing. It's just it is tough to narrow in that discussion when you start talking about the big picture stuff and try to get back to the small. Anyway. All right, I'll shut up. Fan text lines brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates, a personal injury law firm where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. And fan Twitter, it's brought to you by South Hills Kia in Peters Township. You can visit them at southhillskia.net. I should get to a break. We'll do that, and then I'll come back, and then we'll start talking a little bit about O'Neill Cruz, what happens with Joey Bart when he's healthy, where do they go with Jared Triolo. There's going to be some, I would imagine Nick Gonzalez comes back soon. What happens there? And then we'll delve back into the Steelers a little bit to finish up. It's the Fan Evening Show. I'm Jason Mackey. You're listening to Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
And welcome back to the Fan Evening Show. I'm Jason Mackey, here with you for about another hour. Joel Nelson behind the glass, producing and lying to me. Joel told me that the Pacers were going to take care of business tonight, and so far that has not been the case, Joel. It's not happened.
Call me Joel Nellapony, I guess. Pacers down by 16 in the third quarter. I guess there's still time, but wouldn't call it great, Folsy.
Wouldn't call it great. That's all right. I wouldn't mind this series extending, as I'm now a rabid NBA fan, and I get to follow it a little bit more. If my wife is listening, I guarantee she rolls her eyes at this. Like when I get into something and like full bore, it's happened recently with golf, and now it might be the NBA playoffs. We'll see. Oh God, here we go. Another one. So that's all right. 66-51 right now. Knicks 7:27 left in the third quarter. The average cost of gear for a firefighter. I want to tell you a little bit about the 5-Alarm Marathon. It's over $13,000. That's why we're hosting the Fan 5-Alarm Marathon presented by Allegiant Community Federal Credit Union. We're raising funds for volunteers who serve our community. You can donate now at 937thefan.com. It's presented by Cintas, Southside Plumbing and Heating, Target Freight Management, and Glick Fire Equipment. An awesome, awesome event. We're all looking forward to it. Today the pairings came out, and you can find out who's going to be with who. And those aren't steel cage matches or anything like that. At least I don't think so. Just all of our hosts are going to be thrown in a blender and working with different people. I lucked out, Joel. I have two of the easiest hangs on there. I have Hathorne and Jack Hillgrove. Like, that's no problem.
Good company.
Yeah, they're easy. The only tough one is I'm with Jack at 4 in the morning because this is a 26.2-hour marathon, so we go through all through it, and I think it's Limits and Callis do the 2 to 4, and then me and Jack have the 4 to 6. So that's going to be an odd time, but it's going to be a fun one.
So a cup of Joe with Jason and Jack then.
Yes,
basically.
Sir. Yes, sir. And then maybe the cup of Joe comes a little bit later. I don't know when Starkey's coming on, but yeah, looking forward to it nonetheless. All right. get back into some Pirates talk a little bit. And the Steelers topic I wanted to tackle eventually is Steelers running backs. We played some audio earlier in the show from Alex Highsmith. Another player who talked today was Kenneth Gainwell. And I want to get to some of Kenneth Gainwell's comments on the running backs room. But first, wanted to finish up shop a little bit with some Pirates talk. This is an interesting situation they have brewing behind the plate. And not just Henry Davis. I mean, that's the easy part. Obviously, you're going to play Henry Davis, right? It's your 1-1 pick in 2021. He's played well. Joey Bart's hurt. You have to give him an opportunity. But what happens when Joey Bart gets back? Joey Bart's on the 7-day concussion IL. And honestly, that did not look great. Did you see that the other night, Joel? He was like heaving after taking a back swing to the head.
Yeah, that did not look pretty.
That was scary. I hope Joey Bart's okay. You don't wish that on anybody. But assuming, you know, he will come back at some point, what do you do? And so I'm intrigued by this because I think it's time to move Joey Bart to another position, at least, you know, to get him at bats momentarily, whatever. You know, if you're going to catch Henry, you're going to try to find a way maybe to balance Eddie Rodriguez on your major league roster. That's kind of TBD. See what Eddie does in the meantime. I think it would behoove the Pirates, though, to try Joey Bart at first base. He hits left-handers very well. Spencer Horwitz hits right-handers very well. I'm contradicting myself a little bit. I know earlier in the show I talked about the some of the Pirates' philosophies with platoons and pulling guys in and out of the lineup, and you're kind of creating one of those. So it might not work, but I would like to see them give it a chance. I think you need to find ways to keep Joey Bart's bat in the lineup, and maybe that's designated hitter. Maybe that's first base. I don't know. I do think his bat will come around, but right now the Pirates owe it to Henry Davis. They owe it to their team building, to, frankly, Ben Cherington, and what was invested into that number one overall pick. I couldn't think of the word invested in Henry Davis. You have to see. You have to see, but there are some other implications there. Another storyline or another thing going on, Nick Gonzalez is rehabbing at AAA Indianapolis. Sooner or later, Nick Gonzalez is going to come back. They're going to want to give Nick Gonzalez some opportunities. So what happens then? It becomes even further complicated how you sort out this puzzle. Because you can maybe bump Spencer Horwitz over to second base. That's a position he's played before. If you have a left-hander on the mound and you want to get Horwitz's bat in the lineup, maybe you play Joey Bart at first, Horwitz at second, I don't know. I mean, if it's a left-hander, you'd probably play Nick Gonzalez, but you're going to be allocating playing time. It's going to be a little bit more of a meritocracy at this point. And Adam Frazier right now, he is actually hit. There are a lot of singles. The exit velocity is not high, but you know what? He's hitting. He's getting on base. I'll take it. Anybody who's hitting and getting on base, you got to play him. Isaiah Kiner-Falefa is at 297. You're going to play him. So what does that mean? What does all of that mean? You can't play all those guys at once. You can't have a five-man infield. You have to be cognizant of regular playing time and letting guys get into a groove. I have something. I have something, and I think this is a move probably for the long-term fit of the Pirates. Now, I guess I should say this. There's a short-term solution and a long-term solution, or a small solution and a bigger solution. Would you trade Ke Bryan Hayes? Is that something that people would be okay with? I think by and large, yes. I think Ke Bryan Hayes can be a very good and productive major league player. I'm just not sure if it's the right fit here. And that's that way for a number of different guys, but why I say with Hayes, there's a lot of teams that would value the defense that he plays. It's obviously elite. He's won a gold glove. There are zero questions there. If you can bury him in a lineup that has a lot more offensive firepower, he's not going to stand out as much. And maybe he gets a little bit more support, better hit, pitches to hit. I don't know. Maybe if he would go somewhere else, that bat ticks up, whatever. But for the Pirates, we're always going to talk about an artificial salary cap because of how they're operating and trying to be cognizant of where every dollar is going. The Pirates need to spend money to improve their offense. Ke Bryan Hayes next season is going to make $7 million. I would make that trade. I would sacrifice the defense, and I would be eager, frankly, to spend $7 million to improve another part of my team offensively. So I don't know if they will pursue a trade. I don't know if it'll happen immediately. But it is an interesting amalgamation of things. You know, Jared Triolo right now, he would be a replacement for Ke Bryan Hayes if that's the route you wanted to go. One team that I think about with Key Brian Hayes and whether you want to move on from him, the Yankees. They've got a guy as Waldo Cabrera. He is out with a fractured ankle at the moment. Hasn't hit much this season, 243 average, 631 OPS. I believe about a half a war player. Oswald Peraza is their other option. Hasn't done much. You know, they could be in the market for something. And again, the money freed up would help the Pirates. And I just don't see how all of these pieces fit together once Joey Bart comes off the concussion IL and Nick Gonzalez comes back as well. It's certainly convoluted. All right, going to get to another break. I have some thoughts on O'Neill Cruz I want to finish off with and why he gets a bad rap around here. And that's not to say O'Neill Cruz is immune to criticism. He's not. He's done some goofy things, but just something that's been on my mind, and it got asked in a mailbag today, and I wanted to weigh in on it. It's Fan Evening Show. I'm Jason Mack. You're listening to Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
And welcome back to the Fan Evening Show. Jason Mackey here with you until 10:35 tonight. Thanks so much for finding us. Joel Nelson producing Behind the Glass. Wanted to finish up this hour by talking just a little bit more Pirates before we transition to some Steelers running back talk, as well as a question I found myself pondering at the break. Maybe we'll ask this of Joel briefly. I'll give him a minute to think about it. Joel, if Pittsburgh had an NBA team, who would be the most popular people to sit courtside? Who could you picture courtside? Don't say it right now. Just think about it for a minute, because I've got some thoughts about Cruz that I want to get out. I've got a few ideas. I think it's an interesting discussion point, or at least fun anyway, as we talk about the NBA. But so Noah Hiles of the Post-Gazette, my successor on the beat, was asked today in a mailbag, why are locals so critical of O'Neill Cruz at times? I listened to local radio Saturday morning, and we had people criticizing him for admiring his home runs and not coming out of the box faster after he single-handedly won that game on Friday night. It's insane. Now, I didn't listen to what was said on radio Saturday morning, and I'm not going to talk specifically about that instance. But I do think it's interesting to have a conversation about O'Neill Cruz. And interesting, I say that word a lot. I probably say it too much. It's tricky to have a conversation about O'Neill Cruz. And you can even, you'll hear a lot of race stuff brought up. And it shouldn't be brought up, in my opinion. I mean, you can talk about maybe some immaturity, playing the game a certain way, where he's from. You know, and again, that's not a racial comment. That's in the Dominican Republic. A lot of times to get out of there and get seen by Major League scouts, guys are worried about hitting the ball far, throwing hard, running fast. They're worried about skills because that's what gets you scouted. They don't play the game like we do here. They don't understand the game like we do here. And people don't understand that. And they look at O'Neill Cruz or other guys from the Dominican or Panama or Puerto Rico or Venezuela or any of these Latin American countries, and they expect the same sort of development, and that hasn't been the case. Now, you can also have a rational discussion about O'Neill Cruz, and he's been unaware of several scores and situations. And you can criticize that, and you can be upset about it. I don't understand why sometimes with Cruz, the vitriol reaches the level it does. And I've got a theory. I've long had a hypothesis about Cruz, and then it's because he has so much potential. And people look at Cruz, and that's why they get mad and they're so critical, because they see what he can be. Because they see that he's different. Because they see that he's gifted. You know, and you expect so much more. And I think a lot of times what he does also tends to offend what we want the game to be. Tends to offend how we think the game should be played. You know, not everybody can do what Cruz can do with the bat and with his legs and all this stuff. But everybody can know how many outs there are. Everybody can know not to make an out at a certain base. You know, and Cruz has been guilty of that. You know, ground ball hit to the left side. He's at second. He takes off for third and gets thrown out. Needless. Making a first or last out at third. A situational approach at the plate. And he's had that stuff lack. And it's okay to criticize that. It's okay to get upset by that. I mean, professional athletes, they understand what they're signing up for. You know, I had a conversation with Sidney Crosby. I've told this story before. About him not scoring. He said, "Do you honestly think you're putting more pressure on me than I put on myself?" And I thought that was good. You know, if I'm not scoring, I know I'm not scoring. And if guys make mistakes, they know they make mistakes. And O'Neill Cruz has made mistakes. I also try to extend some grace with him in where he's come from, what he's learning how to do. It's very difficult to play Major League Baseball. It's very difficult to change positions in Major League Baseball. It's very difficult to grasp the nuance of a position in the middle of the season. I think O'Neill Cruz, deep down inside, wants to do a good job. I think he wants to show everybody what a talented and quality baseball player he is. And I think sometimes he tries too hard. We saw that the other night when he airmailed a throw practically to Texas. You know, he throws a ball, I think it was like 103, 104. I don't even want to say it was, you know, off the backstop because it wasn't online for the backstop. It was crazy. A lot of it's learning. You know, we shouldn't get as mad about O'Neill Cruz as we do. We should celebrate the amazing things that he's able to do. That doesn't mean you can't be critical. What I'm saying is don't get mad. And I don't understand the vitriol that exists. I mean, maybe it is Pirates frustration rechanneled. I'm not sure. Because, I mean, in the same conversation, we hear about how he's a $200 million player, a $250 million player, 30-30, 40-40, all the StatCast metrics, all the stuff that he does so well. But ripping him for some of the immature mistakes. I mean, not everybody has been blessed with the same opportunity to learn the game that we have. And I think we should understand that. That's part of understanding other cultures and where people come from and how people were brought up. Now, I understand his dad played professional baseball, and so maybe people are holding him to that standard, but that doesn't automatically mean that it clicks. So anyway, Noah went on to answer, and I thought it was a good answer. Some people are just going to dislike any ball player who plays with flash. There are some baseball fans who find bat flips, admiring home runs, etc., distasteful. But I will agree, Cruz individually seems to be criticized far more than most other players in this organization. Perhaps that is because of his potential. He's so freakishly athletic that he can achieve anything. Anyway, that's another thing with Cruz, you know, and I'll wrap up this discussion on this, that he does play with flash. And that's not just O'Neill, that's pervasive around the sport. You know, they're showmen. They want to entertain. You know, I think Cruz likes that. And I don't really have a problem with that. I'm fine with guys entertaining. If I hit a home run 450 feet, you better believe I'd be staring at it too. I'd flip my bat in the air, all that stuff. I have no problem with that. I want him to be a showman. I want him to entertain. I want him to be himself. I want to see his personality. I think we're all better when the personality shines through. What I need to see is just a little bit more plugged in. I need to see a little bit more with it. I need to see a little bit more learning how to play the game. And that's a process, and that takes time. He didn't have some of what we had growing up. And it's okay to allow him to learn and not get mad about it. All right, so a few minutes went by, Joel. Pittsburgh NBA game. Who are we going to see courtside?
First person I thought of was Mike Tomlin.
Ooh, that's a good one.
You know, I can't see why not. I think he would enjoy that type of, like, NBA atmosphere. Others, I thought of immediately Donnie Iris, TJ Watt, Christina Aguilera, and then Paul Skeens and Livy Dunn.
Paul Skeens, Livy Dunn. Interesting.
I feel like that one would be almost guaranteed to happen if there were to be an NBA team in Pittsburgh. Let's pretend it's next season.
Yeah. I'm going to add a few to that list. I think Michael Keaton shows up.
I think so, too.
I think Michael Keaton, big Pittsburgh sports fan, he'd be there. Joe Manganiello shows up at a lot of Pittsburgh sporting events. That wouldn't surprise me. One that we've missed, though. Ben Roethlisberger.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Ben would absolutely be courtside. I think he might be courtside ahead of Tomlin. Aguilera's good. Who else? I mean, there's a lot of seats. They could all be in the same place at the same time, especially if it's a playoff game.
You might see some, like a couple of Pirates together as a group go, because didn't, like, when Garrett Cole was here, him and a couple other Buccos went to a Penguins game, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, Cole enjoyed himself at that one. Remember he was holding a pounder, like banging the glass?
That's right.
I could maybe see Sid at an NBA game. He'd probably be a little bit more low-key about it, though. I don't know if Sid would enjoy sitting courtside.
Yeah, probably a box if I had to guess.
Yeah. Maybe Gino, maybe Letang. Man, I'm really racking my brain on what... And I want to try to think outside of sports. What famous Pittsburghers would be sitting courtside at an NBA game?
There are definitely a lot. I know of that.
Okay, so Alan Saunders is talking about this on Twitter, and I enjoyed it. Okay, some other ones. Jeff Goldblum, Kurt Angle, Wiz Khalifa. Good, good. Cam Hayward, Mark Cuban.
Would Mark Cuban be there, though, if the Mavericks, I guess, whenever the Mavericks were to come into town?
I don't know. I don't know. Bob Pompey, any? That's good. That's good. Somebody said Jim Leland. I don't think Jim Leland would be courtside at an NBA game. There's he's way too far away from a lung dart for that to happen. You can't tuck a cigarette in your mouth at the courtside at an NBA game. He'd have to go outside, find a place to smoke. That would just be a difficult one. All right. We want to get Guy from Penn Hills and then go to a break. All right. Here we go.
All right. It's Guy.
What's going
How
on,
you
Guy?
Doing? I want to say something about them, you know, getting pissed off or being mad because Cruz didn't jump out of the batter's box after he smashed that ball. But years ago, when Barry Bonds did it, nobody got mad.
Yeah.
That's not nice, you know?
What, to get mad if he stares at a home run?
Pardon me?
What do you mean that's not nice?
Ow. He smashed that ball and he knew he did it. You know? And Bonds, when he crashed one, and just, you know, crossed his legs and didn't start running up the first baseline, that's kind of dumb. You know? To the people who want to get pissed off about it, there's no reason for that. You know? When you know you're a good batter and you're smacking a ball and finally you really get a good, good, good one and you put it in a river,
yeah, I'm with you, Guy, and thank you for the call, man. I appreciate it. You put a ball in a river, you can look at it for as long as you want to, as far as I'm concerned. If you're a good hitter, if you're backing it up, man, you do what you want. I have absolutely no problem with it. All right, Fan Weather, it's brought to you by Myers Law Group, Pittsburgh's choice for affordable legal services. Chance of rain on Friday afternoon in Pittsburgh, sunny skies and temperatures in the 70s in San Diego for Pirates Padres over the weekend. Going to take another short break. When we come back, I want to get into the Steelers again. OTAs, they finished up this week. We have audio from Kenneth Gainwell. Want to talk a little bit about the Steelers running backs and what I think this group could become this year with a few additions and guys in different places. All of that and more when we come back. It's Fan Evening Show. I'm Jason Mackey, Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.